You know, there's a good, yeah. Wow, brain.
That was a sentence.
I'm sorry. Let me,
Welcome to Stargazing, a Stargate-gazing podcast. I'm your host, Mary.
And I'm your other host, Kathy.
And each week we review an episode of Stargate alternating between SG-1 and Atlantis.
Hello.
Hello. How's it going?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I put out a table and a mattress end of my driveway and put up a thing on the Facebook Buy Nothing group that was like, there's this outdoor table and chairs that's not in terrible shape if anyone wants it. That's still there, but the mattress disappeared in like minutes. So that's fun.
Excellent.
I didn't advertise the mattress because I can't vouch for it. So I don't know. I hope someone gets good use out of it. It came with the house. My brother used it before he got a real bed after he got a real job. He wasn't super fond of it, but he's also 6'4 and is a twin bed. So not sure how that affected it. But I hope whoever has it has a good time with it.
Fair. Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. Just a bit tired.
Oh, really? Why?
Busy morning.
What were you doing?
There was a half marathon in the town that I live in. So I ran to the start and then I ran the half marathon and then I ran partway home. But then I got to 20 miles and was like, maybe it's time for Jeff to drive me the rest of the way. So I met Jeff at the parking lot and then he drove me home and it was my morning and most of my day, actually.
Yes, that is many miles.
Indeed. But it was the last long run before the full marathon that I'm doing in a couple
All
weeks.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
Deeper time.
I love that race, by the way. I love being there as even a spectator. It's a good race.
Yeah. So I normally do too, but I was a little disappointed by it this year.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What was happening? I know you did say people were annoying you, so.
Yeah. So one of my main frustrations was the fact that they only had sugar-free electrolyte drinks on the
what?
Course instead of like actual Gatorade, which is stupid because sugar-free, you really only need to replace electrolytes. Excuse my exercise-related tangent here, everybody. But you only need to replace your electrolytes generally if you're exercising for an hour or more. And if you're exercising for an hour or more, you actually need to also be replacing your carbohydrates. So there's no purpose to a sugar-free electrolyte replacement drink because you also still need the carbohydrates with those electrolytes. And whatever they use, like whatever fake sweetener is in those things, first of all, a lot of zero calorie sweeteners are dehydrating, which you don't want to be giving people something dehydrating when they're out on a course. And also a lot of those artificial sweeteners or zero calorie sweeteners can lower people's blood sugar because the taste buds taste sweet and that tricks the pancreas into releasing insulin, but then there's no actual sugar for that insulin to then work with. So it actually can cause a drop in blood sugar, both of which are bad when you're running a long distance race. And it just made me angry. And so my low blood sugar probably had a lot to do with my frustration.
That's fair.
I'm like, I didn't bring enough with me. I brought enough for the run to get there. And I figured I was only probably going to run about halfway home. So I brought enough for that, but I did not bring enough for the actual race itself because I assumed that as in years past, they'd have Gatorade on the course, which they always have.
I've rationed it. There should be enough. For what? The journey home.
Did they use Ucan? I hate that
yes,
stuff.
Yes, they
it's
did,
so
and
gross.
I hate it. It doesn't taste good, and as I said, there's no sugar in it and no calories, and that makes it like essentially useless. It's slightly better than just water, but on a cold day like this, when you're not sweating a whole lot, I'm like, I don't need this. I need sugar.
Yeah.
I was pissed.
Yeah, I would be too.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I was annoyed about that. And like I said, because I had low blood sugar, that just made me extra grumpy about other stuff. Like the volunteers who, instead of like actually cheering for the people that were running and being motivating, like most volunteers are, and I will, you know, say I love the volunteers that are out at most races and I appreciate them being there because I know it's hard and very boring. But I did not appreciate the volunteers who were just sitting with their backs to the runners and just scrolling on their phones.
What is that?
Yes.
No.
Yeah. That's garbage. Like, if you need to take a break, you need to step away, totally fine. But take off your volunteer jacket.
You're a disgrace to the uniform.
Yeah.
Step away from the course. Don't just sit right on the sideline with your back to the runners and ignoring the runners that you're there to be supporting. That made me angry, too. To the point where I didn't yell at them, but I yelled to them, probably not a great sign that the runners have more energy than the volunteers,
oh, no.
Right? Or I would run by another group and be like, looks like you're working really hard over there. So are we over here.
Oh, man.
I don't like being obnoxious like that. But then at the same time, if I don't say obnoxious things like that, then I just spend a bunch of time wishing I had said something. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to say something and then probably regret saying something. But I'll regret it if I don't say anything either. So
fair.
I try to at least be relatively polite when I say snarky things to strangers.
You'll never see them again.
Right. Yeah. Those were the main things that annoyed me. But then also just your other typical stuff, like people running without earbuds in and people that brush by you without bothering to tell you that they're on your right or on your left or stopping immediately in front of you without bothering to look behind them, all that kind of bullshit.
Yeah, that stuff's annoying.
Yeah, like I almost ran somebody over because she decided to just move off to the side, except that where she was considering to be off to the side was where I was actually running, and then took off her backpack that she was wearing and almost hit me with it. And then last but not least, I told somebody that I was passing them on their right, and she was so much in her own head that she jumped and almost ran into traffic because she was so startled.
Oh my God.
That somebody was coming up by her. And I'm like, you know, you're not the only one out here. How are you that surprised that somebody's coming up near you?
Yeah. Did she have headphones in, or she just like totally zoned out?
Well, I mean, she did, but like, so does everybody.
Yeah, fair.
And still, there was a lot of traffic on this road too. And I was very worried for her because she came very close to running in front of a car.
Ugh, bad, bad.
Sorry to just be bitchy.
No, that's okay. No, that's annoying. But you got your long run in, so... Good
job. I did get my long run in. And overall, the race was good. But those things and having low blood sugar for most of it just made me more grumpy than usual.
That's fair. Yeah.
While out there. But now I've had all kinds of sugar and cookies and candy and stuff since
all
I came
right.
home.
So the blood sugar is recovering.
Indeed.
Excellent.
Also some protein, of course, in there.
Nice. I was scrolling through my phone earlier. This has nothing to do with it. But there was a news article headline that was like, woman loses 140 pounds by eating more protein and tracking her meals. And I was like, why is this news?
I don't know. That's,
like, that's how,
what I would tell my clients to do when they want to lose weight. I mean, good for her.
Yeah, but why? Why is this news?
I don't know why following proper nutritional advice and losing weight successfully by following basic advice is newsworthy. I mean, that's a lot of weight.
Yeah.
So, yes, excellent for her. But that is weird that they made a news story out of it.
The news, and it wasn't like a local news thing. It was like in some, I can't remember which one, but it was in some bigger thing. But like, I was.
Yeah, that's what makes it weird. If it's local news, sure, even that I understand. Yeah. Like, you know, local town lady that everybody knows lost a bunch of weight. Sure,
yeah.
That's newsworthy for small town newspaper, like the one here. Yeah. But that's weird.
But then,
that's weird.
Yeah, I think the newsiest part is that the news headline didn't just attribute it to like eating more protein and actually added that they tracked their meals instead of some magical like, oh, they just ate low carb and it was fine without anything else. But yeah, anyway, I didn't actually read the article because I was not interested in that. But
yeah, that's fair. It doesn't really sound that interesting.
Yeah. No, that's okay. I don't need that.
Good for her. But
yeah.
Also, I'm not saying that that's easy to do, but yes, generally, if you eat more protein and track your meals and you're trying to lose weight, those things will work for that.
So good times.
Yeah.
That one weird trick, tracking your food and watching
that,
what you eat.
That one weird track, following nutritionist advice and dietitian advice and personal trainer advice to track your food and eat more protein. The basic information that we give all of our clients, you follow that. And you'll actually meet your goals.
Woohoo!
Yeah. It's one weird rule.
Yep. You know who else is trying to follow their goals and stay on track?
Who's that?
Tilk and all the Jibba, basically.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Their goal of getting rid of all the system nerds and being free, which is an important goal to have.
Indeed.
Yeah. What is this episode in which that is the theme?
This is Stargate SG-1. Season 8, Episode 9, Sacrifices. We're at the SGC. Daniel and Jack are talking the halls. Daniel is reporting about the Jaffa. He says that Teal'c and Braytak say the only way to get rid of all the system lords is to recruit as many Jaffa into the fifth column, whatever that is, as possible. Is that the name of their movement? Have we heard that before?
I have no idea. I don't think so.
Okay.
Not that I remember.
The Trojan horse. The fifth column. that betrays a nation unprepared for treachery.
I couldn't remember, and I was like, oh, the fifth column, huh? Yeah. Okay. The more Jaffa they accrue, the sooner then they can then rise up and overthrow all system lords at once. But they do have this other obstacle, which is that Baal has these super soldiers still that aren't going to be joining the Jaffa rebellion.
These super soldiers that we make out to be a huge threat that just kind of suck.
Yep.
And have bad aim and are slow.
Those ones.
Yep. But they're super.
Yep.
And they're soldiers.
Daniel's basically just recapping the Jaffa, like, journey, I guess, or, like, what it's going to be, because then he's like, yes, and then even if they can someday do that, there's still a massive fight ahead because of this Baal problem. But then he starts talking about Ishta, so it turns out that this is a little bit more specific and more present than the randomly just talking about the future of the Jaffa to Jack as they talk the halls. He says the problem is that Ishta does not want to wait and wants to take out Moloch now because he's continuing to murder all female Jaffa. And she would like that to stop.
Fair.
Yeah.
Still makes no sense why he would want to kill all female Jaffa.
No,
but
it doesn't make any sense. Daniel's like, she's trying to organize this and Teal'c and Breaktac are trying to convince her not to see the bigger picture. Jack doesn't care, though. He said his question was, how's it going? And Daniel spat all this at him.
I mean, to be fair, when they can't possibly save all of the female Jaffa that are being born and murdered before she gets the chance to save them, I don't blame her for being in a bigger hurry than...
No.
They're making it sound like Teal'c and Breaktac and everyone else are.
Yeah, I actually really, like, I don't agree with Teal'c and Breaktac in this particular... argument between the two of them.
I don't either, because they make it sound like she's being irrational by wanting to up the timeline, but it totally makes sense that she wants to up the timeline.
Yeah, and it sucks that, like, obviously there are Jaffa everywhere getting killed all the time by other Jaffa, by system lords, you know, all of that. But this guy is slaughtering children.
Yeah, this is infanticide. Yeah. That's a whole other level.
Yeah. So, no. Daniel and Jack make their way to the gate room because there was an announcement while they were talking that there was an off-world activation. They meet up with Teal'c and Breaktac as they come through the gate. Jack asks how the trip was, and Teal'c's like, I have been betrayed by those I trust most. And I was like, oh no. Because I did not remember this episode. Teal'c kind of storms out of there. So they're like, Breaktac, what's up with Teal'c? And Breaktac says there is a complication. And that is that Ryak is in love and is getting married, which is huge betrayal, apparently, to Teal'c.
Seriously, though, how old is that kid?
I don't know. He's not that old.
No, I know that we're 8 seasons in, so theoretically he is about 8 years older than when we met him. But still, when we met him, he was like... maybe 7, 8, I don't know, but he can't be more than like 16, I'm guessing.
He's a teenager getting married. So
that's too
young. This is another society where the youth are going to get married.
Did you say youths?
Yeah, 2 youths.
Yeah.
Breaktac in the scene was wearing this like white robe, which I don't remember seeing him in before.
Oh, I didn't notice.
It was like very white compared to, he's usually in a gray one or a brown or his gray outfit or the brown robe. But it gave me, like, Breaktac the White sort of vibes.
Has he died when we weren't aware?
I don't know.
And then come back?
I doubt it, but it had that feel to me.
Yeah, he must have been off fighting the Balrog at some point.
I am Master Breaktac. What?
That we just didn't get the opportunity to see, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then it's after credits, and Jack goes to talk to Teal'c. Actually, they're playing ping pong to... blow off some steam, I guess. Jack isn't doing all that well. Apparently, he's not very good at ping pong, or else just Teal'c is great at ping pong. Either way, he's losing. And they're talking about Ryak's upcoming wedding, which is supposed to be in 3 days, which is, of course, quick. But at least just from this perspective, we have no idea how long they've been dating or planning to get married before this point. Teal'c is upset because Ryak didn't even consult him at all before making this decision, which is fair because you're barely in Ryak's life and he's technically an adult now, so he doesn't need to consult you, Teal'c. Sorry. Teal'c blames the girl for causing all reason to leave Ryak's head.
Damn girl. Moloch, right? Maybe Moloch has the right idea, stupid girls. God.
Yikes.
I went there. It's fine.
Kathy's the worst.
We knew that.
I can't believe what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Jack asks what Ishta thinks of all this, and Ishta's fully on board because she thinks that tradition should persist at all costs and that it'll be very motivating to have a wedding and a happy occasion in the middle of all of the chaos and creppiness that is happening. Teal'c says Ryak is too young to know what love is. I don't know that I agree with that sentiment, but might be too young to know what long-term love is. Yeah. Maybe. He says that it can inevitably weaken a warrior's resolve, which is garbage. Yep. I didn't like that bit of Teal'c patronizing.
Bad take, Teal'c.
Hey, man, that's not cool.
Yeah, agree. Jack recommends just sticking his fingers in his ears and humming loudly to resolve the problem, which, of course, is definitely going to solve some
issues.
Absolutely. And then a voice announces an unscheduled off-world activation, so they have to go and leave their ping pong game behind. After Teal'c leaves first, though, Jack serves one ball that, of course, Teal'c doesn't volley back because he's already left, and he's very proud of himself for getting 1 point.
That's very silly.
Against Teal'c. Yeah. Quite silly.
In the control room, they learn that Ishta is coming through, so they let her on in. Teal'c and Jack go down to the gate room, and Jack makes a point of, like, pushing forward past Teal'c to go in first, which was kind of weird.
Yes.
Ishta says there is an urgent matter they need to discuss, and that is that Hochtil may have been compromised, and that's bad.
Indeed. Hochtil being the planet where they're trying to hide all of the female Jaffa,
yeah.
In case anyone forgot, which I had forgotten.
It comes back with context, yeah. But
it does.
So they head to the briefing room to talk more about this. Ishta reports that they had a meeting the day before, and one of their high priestess did not show up on time, which tipped them off that something was wrong, and therefore they could have been compromised. Teal'c recommends evacuating immediately, and it's just like, yes, but we don't know where to go. Can you help us? Or actually, Jack just offers the help.
Yeah, that's good.
He offers up Sam to find one. She says there are a number of possible worlds on record, but they should probably do some more exploring before they move there permanently. In the meantime, they can't stay where they are, though, so they're invited to stay at the SGC, which I feel like Hammond would not have allowed this so easily.
I was thinking the same thing, especially when they come through the gate later, like, horses and all.
Yeah.
Where did the horses stay?
I don't know. They just wander the halls, too. Yeah.
Can they fit in the elevators to put them out to pasture somewhere on the surface? Is there anywhere to pasture out on the surface?
Yeah. And it's not even that Hammond would just be like, no, this sounds terrible. I think that Hammond is more concerned about the Earth side of things and how, like, the other people in the Air Force might feel, or President Bestie might feel, and needs to make sure that everybody's on board. Instead, they're like, yes, your whole society can just come stay with us.
Yeah. However many people that happens to be. They make it sound like it's a ton, but then it doesn't really look like a whole lot. So
it doesn't look like, but I thought they had a fair number.
Yeah, I thought they had like a couple hundred, so who knows?
Yeah. We do see, too, in this scene, the written by credit goes to Christopher Judge.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
And also, at the end of the scene, Teal'c looks like he is staring daggers at Ishta, so he's apparently got a problem with her, too, in addition to Ryan.
Well, she's the one that's on board with the wedding.
Fair. So. Yes.
He's mad at her for that, presumably. Yeah. The next scene is, in fact, when all of the people and the horses and the supplies are coming through. Ryak comes through and greets everybody and introduces Karen. But not spelled like that, though.
I think it's also pronounced Karin, wasn't it?
Oh, okay.
Or Karin.
It's like, I don't remember her name being Karen. That makes more sense. K-A-R apostrophe Y-N.
It's basically Karen. You could call her Karen. We could call her Karen.
Yeah. I want to talk to your manager.
She's definitely not a Karen, though. I like her a lot, actually.
So maybe not.
Yeah, she seems very nice, and she's honored to meet everybody. Ryak asks them all if she isn't the most beautiful thing that they've ever seen, and I appreciated her reaction to that, that he not treat her like an object.
Isn't that nice?
I was like, oh, I like this person.
Yeah, yeah.
She's pretty great. They thank Jack and the others for letting them have their union ceremony there, which Daniel is surprised about, because even though they're trying to eventually find a more permanent place for all of them to live, they don't want to delay their wedding, and their wedding is scheduled for 3 days from now. They're not going to have a new planet by then, so the wedding's going to have to happen here at the base.
All right.
And there's going to be a lot that they need to do to get ready for it. Sam is also there, as surprised as Daniel is, that there's going to be a wedding there. So they have a lot of fake cheer and fake smiles at this news, because they realize that there's probably going to be a lot of work that they have to do in order to make this wedding happen. And meanwhile, Sam also needs to go work on finding them a planet that will be a more permanent solution so that they don't have these horses around the base indefinitely. I mean, horses are great. Just doesn't seem like you would want them in a giant underground facility, though.
No, no. So weird.
And likely smelly very soon.
Yeah, trying to think. I mean, maybe they use one of their, like, observation rooms where they have the overlooking. Maybe the horses live in there. I don't know.
That doesn't seem like a very pleasant place for the poor horses.
Maybe they
get VIP rooms. There's no grass. What's that? VIP rooms? Each horse gets its own VIP room. Yep.
How many horses do they have?
I definitely saw at least two. I think I saw three, though.
Okay.
Although maybe I was just seeing the same horse twice, but there were for sure at least two.
It kind of makes me wonder why they wouldn't have just brought them through, and then maybe they sent some of them to the Alpha site to hang out, so that maybe that's why it doesn't look like there's that many around. But also,
maybe.
Then why wouldn't you send the horses? It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but I was about to say the Alpha site would for sure be a better place for the horses.
Yep.
Than the SGC would.
But let's just roll with what we have, which is horses in the SGC. Do they ride the elevators?
I don't know. I want to know that. They might be able to go in, like, the cargo elevators.
I mean,
They've got to have cargo elevators.
Arnold rode a horse in an elevator in True Lies, so...
Press the button for the top floor, please.
This is true. And that was just a regular elevator. But I'm sure they've got cargo elevators to move large things around that the horses can fit in addition to the small personnel elevators
that we see. They did get the Stargate in there.
Yeah, but they did that by opening up the roof.
No, I'm just saying there are ways. Anyway.
Fair. Helicopter the horses out.
Yes. Anyway.
Yes.
And we are in Jack's office. Braytek stops by to see him. Jack asks what that smell is when Braytek comes in. And Braytek's like, that's the horses. So whatever horses they have are close enough to Jack's office to make it smelly. Either that or Braytek smells like horses. Not sure.
Could be both.
Braytek tells Jack that everyone is grateful that they can stay here. And Jack's like, yeah, always willing to help out. And then Braytek lays it on. He's like, you are a wise and gracious leader, O'Neill of Minnesota. So Jack's basically like, what do you want? Braytek tells Jack he is going to be officiating Ryak and Corinne's wedding. They would like to proceed with it here on schedule. Jack's like, is there going to be cake? Because that's all he needs to approve it.
I don't blame him. Cake is amazing.
It's true.
Love cake.
It's true. So yeah, there's cake and they're going to have a wedding. All good with Jack.
Yeah.
Then we are in Ishta's quarters. She has been given one of the VIP rooms.
And candles.
And candles, of course. Standard issue for Jaffa, right?
Yeah.
Teal'c comes in to talk to her. He says she's been avoiding him. And she's like, yeah, because you seem like I'm not worthy of your presence. You're mad at me. And he's like, what do you mean? And she says, well, you will not bless the union between Ryak and Corinne. And that is an insult to Corinne and therefore an insult to Ishta as her leader person. Teal'c's like, I didn't mean it that way. They get into it a little bit about what Teal'c's issue is about this wedding. And it's not that he doesn't trust Ishta. It's not that he doesn't think Ishta and Corinne are good warriors. It is that he doesn't want Ryak to have to make the same decision he did of choosing between his family and the greater mission that they are on.
The greater mission.
I should have said the greater good.
The greater good.
Shut it!
The greater good.
He's like, Ryak's still young and he does not need to be tied down so soon or make this decision so soon. Ishta's like, well, you don't have a say in his decision. Ryak had no say in what you did and you have no say in what he does. She says that they should not sacrifice what makes them Jaffa. So I guess getting married as a teenager is a Jaffa thing.
Yeah. Kind of sounds like it.
She's still not buying, too, that Teal'c doesn't have issues with Ishta and her movement in general. Because she talks about how maybe once they're all free from tyranny, then he'll see that they're worthy of his war.
I mean, he can be a little chauvinistic at times, unfortunately.
It's true. And Teal'c again points out that overthrowing Moloch is not going to do very much. Other Goa'uld will just step in and take his stuff.
Yeah, but even if that happens, those other Goa'uld don't have the policy of killing all females, though.
No other
Goa'uld has that policy. So, like, literally any other Goa'uld would be an improvement over Moloch for these people.
Yes. And Ishta is not backing down. She says she will not stand by and watch more of her sister slain. While the leaders of the so-called Jaffar Rebellion plot and scheme and do nothing. Which, ouch. Teal'c is like, oh, you don't want to fight by my side. You want to control and dominate. And it's just like, yeah, like we have been. Because you did that for generations. The Jaffa and the Goa'uld. They end it with basically they're angry at each other. Even though their goals align, they're not exactly the same. And it's causing a huge amount of issues between them.
Quite.
Ishta really, really wants Moloch dead, and Teal'c is like, gotta look at the big picture, which is kind of funny given that anytime the Tok'ra take the line of let's look at the big picture, the Earth people and Teal'c aren't necessarily like, yes, let's go along with that.
Very true.
Kind of weird.
It is. Yeah.
Not that the Tok'ra are even around. I haven't seen them in a long time.
We haven't. Yeah. They did break the alliance a while back, though, because they were talking about how every time that they get involved with the Earth people, they end up losing a bunch of their own and they can't replace their numbers. So
also not wrong.
Yeah. And then there was a parting scene between Jacob and Sam at some point.
Right.
I don't remember when that happened. It was a little while back, not too too long ago. But yeah, so no, they're not around.
Yeah, okay.
They'll surely be back.
Yes. But in the meantime, Teal'c and Ishta part ways angry.
They do. And then Jack and Sam are talking the halls now about the need for a goat for a sacrifice.
Yay.
Jack says, nope, that's not happening. Sam is relieved to hear that. Jack suggests a piñata instead, and Sam will suggest it to them. Meanwhile, she thinks that she has found a planet for them. Ishta seems to like it. There's water and a stable climate, both of those very good and important, but Ishta doesn't think that they'll be ready to go there for a couple of weeks because I guess they want to like set up some stuff first, which is understandable. But that means that there is no way around it. The wedding is going to happen here at the base. Meanwhile, they're talking about Teal'c and whether or not Sam has seen Teal'c, and she's pretty sure he's locked himself in his room, and Jack calls him a chicken. Then it is wedding time.
It's dinner time!
Apparently the gate room is the place to have a wedding. I thought that was a weird choice.
Isn't it just the rehearsal?
Is it just the rehearsal?
I think so.
Oh, okay. I thought it was the actual wedding. That makes sense why they are dressed so much differently here than they were. Spoiler alert, later in the actual wedding. Okay. So there's a whole bunch of people around. They are doing the whole ceremony thing and exchanging vows. And Corinne gets a circle of fidelity, which I thought was garbage. Meanwhile, Ryak gets a totem of bravery, which I thought Corinne deserved.
Oh, yeah.
And why not give Ryak the circle of fidelity on his head?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, seriously. Then Braytak says it's time for the bride to kneel before her husband in respect, which Corinne absolutely outright refuses to do.
Good girl.
And I was like, yeah, go you.
Yeah. Yep.
She's like, I kneel, but she specifically says, I kneel before no man, not even my husband. Yeah. And I thought that was great. I was proud of her. Yeah. Braytak protests that that's been part of the ceremony for thousands of years. And Ryak is embarrassed that she's disgracing him. And she's like, well, sorry, I don't kneel before anybody. Sorry if that's what you're expecting. It's just not going to happen. And if anyone's going to kneel, you should kneel before me in return. And that's the only way I'd consider it, is if you both kneel before each other, which Ryak is not so keen on, and says maybe he's chosen poorly. And so Corinne, understandably, rips off her circlet of fidelity off of her head and storms out of the room and says that maybe they're not going to get married after all. And Ryak storms off as well, and Braytek is left there in front of the crowd saying, I see why we rehearse these things now.
Did you like, too, when they flash to Teal'c and he's up there in the control room smiling that they're fighting?
Yeah, I thought that was a little obnoxious.
Obnoxious. Really obnoxious, Teal'c.
Yeah, not a good look for Teal'c.
No.
To be happy that they are angry and upset. Yeah. I did also like that Braytek was sipping from the wine goblet that he was holding while they're arguing and storming off.
Yes. Then there's a gate alert. There's another activation, unscheduled.
Exactly, which is exactly why I thought that it was weird to have a wedding or even just a rehearsal wedding in the gate room when this can happen at any time.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. Why would you do that? But they did it.
They did. Yeah.
They're getting a message for Ishta through the gate. She says that it is from one of her contacts among Moloch's Jaffa and that he is requesting a summit. And is that he Moloch or he the Jaffa?
I think he the Jaffa was my impression. Okay.
Teal'c asks, why do they want to meet? And she says that their forces are hiding among the Jaffa of Moloch and that they have become large in number, but there are still many who are loyal to him. Okay. And that they risk being exposed. Who? Like all of them?
Who's they?
Apparently all of the people that are opposed to him, but we never really find out how.
And then she says they need to send the coordinates of the new home world to those who will go. Why would you use the new home world?
Yeah, that seems like a bad idea. Find a third planet that you can then go there and pick up those people, because it'd be way too easy for those coordinates to fall into the wrong hands.
As we see. But her dialogue there just confused the hell out of me. And I was just like, I don't understand why any of this is happening. But that's okay.
No, really didn't make much
sense. So they're going to send the coordinates to the planet that Sam already worked hard to find for them. And Teal'c's going to go, too, to the summit to perhaps provide counsel. Even though, as Ishta says, he has no say in their matters. She's like, well, you can provide counsel, but you will abide by my rules. Teal'c and Braytek have a side look at each other, but Teal'c ultimately signals his consent with his signature head bow.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Then we're back in Ishta's quarters. Corinne is there keeping her company and also talking about the situation with Ryak. Corinne wants to just go with Ishta and basically forget about the wedding at this point, but Ishta says, no, you need to stay here and finish up the wedding preparations. But Corinne is not too convinced about that. She's not convinced that she wants to marry Ryak at all at this point, and says that he's as pigheaded as his father is. Ishta says that until Corinne has fought as many battles as Teal'c has, then she should not speak ill of him, because it is thanks to him and everybody else in the SGC here that they have the Tritonin that she pauses for a second to inject into her arm, and also mentions that they would still be slaves to the Gua'uld symbiotes because they wouldn't have the Tritonin, of course. Corinne asks how Ishta can accept Teal'c's affection, knowing that he doesn't really support their war against Moloch and doesn't really seem to care, and is also all on board with archaic traditions that oppress female Jaffa. Excellent points, Corinne, all of those. Ishta says that they often differ on a bunch of things, but deep down they have the same hunger for freedom. And then they talk about whether or not Teal'c sees Corinne as being a fit match for Ryak, which he doesn't seem to. But Ishta says doesn't really matter what he thinks. He would never find anybody as good of a fit for Ryak as Corinne is. So take that, Teal'c.
Yeah.
But also, Ishta mentions that Teal'c has sacrificed a lot, so his opinions are just a little skewed when it comes to Ryak and wishing to keep Ryak free from any kind of pain or loss or anything along those lines. They talk about whether or not Ryak himself respects her, Corinne, as a warrior, the way that Tilk respects Ishta, and Ishta reminds Corinne that that took a lot of convincing before that happened. And then she also reminds Corinne that Ryak also wants her respect as much as she wants Ryak's.
Elsewhere in the SGC, Ryak is practicing his moves. His physical moves, not his, like, moves on the ladies or anything.
His fight yes. moves, not his dance moves.
I suppose I could have even been more specific than that, I suppose.
They're breakdance fighting!
Braytac comes in and tells him he parries, or his parries, he parries too low, and to hold his staff yes. higher. Ryak's like, leave me alone. Braytac's like, okay, bye. But then Ryak starts talking again, so clearly he didn't mean it.
No.
He's like, am I not a good son? Have I not brought honor to my name? Why does my father not want me to marry Corinne? Braytac is like, oh, so you're still getting married then? And Ryak's like, that's not the point. Okay. Braytac tells him that he has made a choice to fight for freedom for the Jaffa, and you need to be sure that you've committed to this without any question. And Ryak's like, yeah, I did, and I know what I'm doing, but also that's why my dad abandoned me, because we made him weak. Which seems to be a thing Teal'c thinks too, so I get where he gets that from.
Yeah, yeah. But that's also another example of Teal'c being kind of shitty.
Yeah.
If he's abandoning his family because he thinks they make him too weak. But yeah,
Teal'c's not always the best dad.
No.
He's no Worf, but...
No.
You know.
This is true. Very true.
Braytac goes into a bit about Teal'c's decision-making process, that he had stayed First Prime of Apophis as long as he could because he was worried about his family. He killed other Jaffa and did terrible things to keep his family safe. And then when he left... he had to abandon them, and it was very, very difficult for him. And it's not that it made him weak, but it was his fear and doubt that made him weak. Once he was no longer full of fear and doubt, he became stronger.
So leaving was a good thing. Abandoning yep. them was a good thing is the takeaway of this conversation, essentially.
But at least it didn't make him weak.
Yeah. That would have been the worst.
It made him stronger. Yep. It's okay. Ryak says he forgave his father for that, so it's fine.
Yeah, if you're ever concerned that you're getting too weak, just try abandoning your family and you'll be a stronger person in the end. Moral of the story. Yeah. Nothing's worse than being weak.
Yeah. Ugh. Vulnerability. Ugh. Ryak says he has the same feeling with Corinne, that she fuels his desire to fight for freedom, and they want to fight together, which is different than Teal'c and Drac.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
But I mean, that's also, I think, the circumstances, right? Because they were still living in their traditional Jaffa society at that point, and this is basically a whole new society that Ishta has built trying to save these women. So
yeah, exactly. And they did mention that females and children were taught to fight because they basically needed to be able to defend themselves in their homes when the male Jaffas were away, but they weren't looked on with the same level of respect as the male warriors were. So this Ishta's whole thing is quite different from that.
Braytac, like, you're young and you have a lot to learn, and neither you nor Corinne know what you're going to face in a full-scale war with the Gwold. Then Ryak's like, I don't need my father's blessing, and he insults Corinne. She's a formidable warrior who deserves respect. And Braytac's like, she also deserves your respect.
Yeah.
Because remember that?
Which you definitely weren't showing her before.
Incident, remember? Yeah.
Yep. Then we are on the new planet, presumably the new home planet that all of the Hochtil people will be going
to. Wasting planets, guys.
Right? Yeah, seriously. There are a couple Jaffa there from Malak's ranks called Aaron and Korok. And they are talking about the ranks of the Rebel Jaffa being sizable enough to win, and they're going to need to strike now, though, if they're going to be successful in that. Ishta is there, of course, because that's the whole point of this meeting, and she's all on board with striking now before Malik discovers all of the rebels hiding in his forces. There's also a bunch of other people there worth mentioning. Yeah. It's only these two guys that get names, but there's also a bunch of other rebel Jaffa from Malik's rank there as well. And Tilk speaks up, though, which I didn't really feel like this was Tilk's place to be saying anything. But no. He called to all of them and said that he knows that their hearts are prepared for battle, but, you know, just wait, though. What if you just waited? Wait until we're all ready to rise up against all of the system lords, and then you can have your freedom, and we can all be free at the same time. Like I said, it just seemed weird to me, and like it really wasn't his place to be speaking, because he's, I don't want to say an outsider, but kind of an outsider here. He isn't one of Malik's followers or part of Malik's society the way that everybody else is. And so the fact that he was trying to tell them all what they should be doing in their war against Malik specifically seemed weird to me.
Yeah, and Ishta wasn't having it either.
No, she was pissed. Understandably. And she even asked, like, seriously, this is the counsel that you came here to offer? Your counsel is shit, basically, was her implication. Then there is some noise outside, and a whole bunch of staff weapons are being fired, and they are surrounded. There are Jaffa outside with a bunch of weapons, and they're being fired on. Tilk and Ishta and Aaron manage to get away from the tent while everyone else is being attacked. They run off into the woods and make their way up to this kind of embankment that overlooks the gate, and there are a whole shit ton of Jaffa guarding it that, from their expressions, seems to be not their Jaffa, but Malik's Jaffa. Malik's non-rebel Jaffa guarding the gate. So that's bad. They talk about how well-guarded the gate is, in fact. Ishta thinks that they should go back to the meeting tent to see if anybody has survived, but Tilk doesn't really like that idea. Then the gate opens. Nobody comes through, but Jack calls through to Tilk, who is thankfully able to talk quietly enough through his radio that nobody at the gate seems to hear what's happening. They're all kind of up in arms and at the ready because the gate is open, but they don't hear the conversation between Jack and Tilk. They talk about the fact that there's a whole bunch of people at the gate and Tilk is not going to be able to come back. Tilk tells Jack about the ambush and all of Malik's Jaffa being here and that the address of the planet must have fallen into the wrong hands somehow. How could that have possibly happened? Jack offers backup. Tilk says that would be a bad idea because there's way too many people for backup. And also there might be some ships in orbit that they don't even know about for sure. They need more time to gather some intel before Jack does anything. So Jack agrees that he'll call back in about an hour. So the three of them get up and go back into the woods, presumably to wander around and get more information. Tilk tells Ishta that someone within the camp has betrayed her, as though she couldn't have figured that out by herself at this point. Ishta, though, has other things that she's concerned about, in that her Tritonin was in her pack that she left behind in the tent when they were fleeing. So that's bad. She does not have any Tritonin. Tilk's like, no worries, I've got plenty. But then when he pulls out his own Tritonin thing, it's broken. So he also has no Tritonin, and that sucks all around.
At the SGC, things aren't going great. A bunch of Jaffa and Ryak and Daniel are all shouting at each other or over each other. Jack and Braytac come in and Braytac just goes silent and everyone shuts up, which is great. Jack asks Daniel what's going on and they all start to talk again, but Braytac's like, shut up.
I love Braytac.
Yeah, me too. Jack's like, I said Daniel. Daniel says everyone's a little upset. Thank you, Daniel. That's not helpful.
Captain Obvious. Yeah.
The Jaffa that are there are like, we need to mount a rescue to get Ishta back. Jack's like, we're working on it. Ryak suggests maybe getting a ship and going, but Daniel's like, it would take a week to get there, so that's not gonna work. Braytac then tells everyone to go to their rooms. And even though there's a little bit of protest, they all go because it's Braytac.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back on the planet that's no longer useful to anyone at the SGC or the Jaffa, Tilk Ishta and the other guy, Aaron, who fled with them. Are they back at the tent that they started in? They're at some tent.
Yeah, they're back at the tent they started in, I think, looking to get supplies see if there's anybody that's still alive there.
Yeah. They can only see six Jaffa guarding it, but Teal'c points out that there could be more hiding nearby, waiting for people to come back. It's just like, we gotta do something. The Tauri have troops and weapons. Why aren't they here? And Teal'c's like, because we don't have enough information. And once we have more information, maybe then we can do something. So for now, we can't do anything. Ishta is already showing signs of weakness. Weak. She's so weak. And it's probably because she has weak family and connections and vulnerability.
Nothing is worse.
It's not the Tritonin. It's her emotions.
No, because she cares about too many people. She should just walk away from all of them and she'd be fine.
Yeah, so she's not doing great. She's still okay, but she's showing signs that things are not going well and she needs her Tritonin. Teal'c suggests they rest there. Aaron is not cool with this plan. He was like, are we giving up? Are we doing nothing? Like, what are we doing? And Teal'c's like, I still need to gather information. Then Ishta's like, I need to talk to Teal'c privately because this is a personal matter and not having anything to do with our rebellion. I promise. Just let us have a chat. Teal'c doesn't trust Aaron, it turns out, because when he walks away, the first thing he says is like, he could have been the informant. She says, I know that, but he is right. We need to do something because I am already growing weak. I don't even know why they needed to talk privately. There really wasn't anything. They decide they're going to stay where they are and get some rest while one of them takes watch through the night or whatever.
I think they just wanted to talk privately to commiserate on the fact that they didn't know if they could trust Aaron or
not. I guess so. But maybe Aaron could pull Ishta aside and be like, I don't trust Teal'c. And then Teal'c and Aaron could be like, can we trust Ishta?
Don't trust Ishta. Yeah. She cares about too many people. She does. She's so
weak. She likes women. Like, she takes care of them. She is upset that there's genocide happening of women.
She considers herself as having all of these sisters. She's just got too much family.
Yep.
Yep. It's morning. Aaron asks Teal'c where Ishta is. And Teal'c says that it was her turn to take watch, which I thought was weird. Because if Teal'c took the first watch, that means that Aaron must have taken the second one if Ishta's was the one on the morning. So why wouldn't Aaron have known that Ishta's turn was after his?
I don't know.
Anyway, though, she's gone. I didn't really understand why the Jaffa would come and take just her and leave Teal'c and Aaron. Or did she get up and wander off while it was her watch?
I think she got up and wandered off and tried to get her Tritonin back on her own. That's my...
Oh, yeah. Maybe. Okay. In any case, yeah, it's not looking so good for her. She's been captured. She is brought inside of a tent in front of a guy with glowy eyes. That is indeed going to be Malik. We will eventually find out.
We immediately find out.
We immediately find out when somebody shouts Malik, yes. And Teal'c says Malik is here. Aaron says that they need to act. Even if Ishta can't be saved, they're going to have to take an opportunity to kill Malik while they have the chance. And Teal'c's like, but no. What if no? I know. And Aaron essentially is like, well, screw you, because I want to kill him. This is the chance to kill him. We need to take him out when we have the chance, regardless of what you have to say, Teal'c. Teal'c says that without any reinforcement, they could be swarmed by Malik's forces if Aaron were to go and do that. But Aaron doesn't care. He's willing to die for the cause. But Teal'c thinks that he won't really be dying for anything if he tries to just rush in there and gets killed himself before he manages to take Malik out. Aaron now is accusing Teal'c of being weak and having a mind that is clouded with feelings for Ishta. And Teal'c zaps him and says that he can't be trusted and takes his staff weapon and then wanders off.
Conflict solving.
Yep. Indeed.
Then we are back in the SGC. Braytac has a shiny black cape on. Is this cape always that shiny? It looked really shiny.
It's usually kind of, not generally, yeah. I don't think.
I liked it. I want a shiny black cape.
Right? That'd be great.
Yeah. I don't know where I would wear it or anything, but...
Everywhere?
No capes. You're just gonna get sucked into an airplane turbine or something. So.
It's true. So says Edna
Yeah,
Rhodes.
Exactly. Yeah. Daniel reports that Ishta has been captured and Moloch is on the planet. So apparently Teal'c has communicated with the Earth folks again. He tells Braytak they are going to coordinate a missile attack on the Jaffa at the gate to distract them so Teal'c can rescue Ishta. Braytak's like, well, Moloch will probably kill her. Daniel says Teal'c's worried about what he's going to do to her in the meantime, so that's ominous.
Indeed. But then, of course, that meantime involves using some sparkle bling to torture Ishta and make fun of how weak she is as well. Moloch tells her that she needs to grovel before her god and beg for his forgiveness. He also wants to know who the other sinners are who would betray him. He says that if he can get them to renounce their renouncing ways, essentially, that maybe he can still save their souls for them. Of course, Ishta doesn't say anything. She's not going to betray all of her people. Moloch then just makes fun of her for being so weak and laughs at how many people she loves and cares about.
Like you do.
Because that's clearly the only reason that you could be so weak.
We are back in the SGC, in the briefing room, I believe.
Indeed.
SG Two-Thirds and Jack are talking to Braytak?
Yes.
I don't like when SG1 makes me do math. What's that about?
Right? Seriously.
God. It's really hard to divide by three.
It really is. So much harder than dividing by four.
Sam reports that they are going to use a UAV to drop Tritonin on Teal'c. Because, as Braytak says, he needs all his strength to rescue Ishta. Then the UAV is going to paint the targets at the gate so that they can throw missiles at them.
Yay.
Braytak reports that the rebel Jaffa in Moloch's ranks are preparing for war against the other Jaffa who are still loyal to Moloch. He's not sure if they can win, though. And Sam's like, well, even if they do, another ghoul is going to take his place. But again, are they going to murder children?
Right. As we've mentioned before, only one of the Goa'uld seems to be all on board with the infanticide of females. So literally anyone else would be an improvement.
Although she does provide a worst case scenario where this new Goa'uld just comes and kills all of them to prove a rebellion is terrible.
And which is, there is that
it is a possibility.
Probably not too likely, I wouldn't think, though.
Because that's a lot of resources. Like,
yeah, exactly. They'd be losing out on a lot of resources and workers and people to enslave and stuff.
Doesn't mean they wouldn't do it, but you know.
Yeah, I don't think it's likely.
Braytak, though, agrees it is a possibility. But he says, such reason is beyond them now. Yes, they are totally unreasonable, these people who want to overthrow their overlord.
Yeah.
My God, what are they thinking?
I have no idea. What could they possibly be thinking?
They probably all have feelings, too. And families.
And family members that they care about. They're so weak.
Yeah.
In the gate room, Sylar is there ready to launch a UAV. So they do. They send it through the gate. Sam gets Teal'c's radio signal and the UAV starts heading towards that. But then it is blasted out of the sky by some staff weapons. So that seems bad. Sam tells Teal'c via radio where it should be so that Teal'c can try to find it wherever it's crashed and hopefully his Tritonin is still intact inside. A little bit later, Braytak asks Sam if they can still send the missiles through anyway, but Sam says that without any laser-painted targets, which were going to be marked by the UAVs, they would just fly out their fuel and crash. And I guess there's not really much point in sending through more UAVs if they were just going to get shot down the way that the other one did.
Fair.
Teal'c manages to find that one, and he does get his Tritonin, but by the time that he gets there, a whole bunch of Jaffa have also gotten there, and they're hiding in the bushes, I guess, as Teal'c comes up. He gets his Tritonin out of it. They surround him. And there's a little back and forth with people calling Teal'c Shulfa and a bunch of people saying Cree. And Teal'c sneaks his Tritonin into his vest pocket out of nowhere. Aaron comes and takes out all of the Jaffa that had been surrounding him. And then comes up to Teal'c and asks if there's anything else he can do to prove his loyalty. Teal'c tells him, indeed.
It was not enough.
Apparently not. Saving his life from 6 or 7 Jaffa who were about to kill him. Not enough.
In the tent on the planet, Ishta is not looking so good.
No.
She's laying on the ground motionless with her eyes open and kind of glazed, kind of looking around a little, but...
staring in the middle distance.
Yeah. Moloch finds her Tritonin in her pack and is like, oh, you want this evil serum that's going to poison you? Or maybe it'll give you enough strength so I can keep sparkle blinging you. Go ahead, take that. Then you'll have more time with your god.
Yay.
Yeah, so he drops it on the ground. Two Jaffa come in to tell him that word comes from Goranak, whatever or whoever that is, that there's an uprising happening, probably one of his planets then, that 2,000 people, Jaffa, are marching on his temple.
Oh.
So Moloch's like, yes, as I have foreseen. Good cover.
Bullshit,
yeah,
Moloch.
Yeah.
You did not.
Yep. The Jaffa tells him that the Hatak are waiting in orbit there and awaiting his command. And Moloch is like, I am done with Ishta. This little distraction, so trivial. I'm totally a god with bigger problems, but I do like to take the time to do a little bit of minor torture with random people.
Who doesn't?
He's like, I had a little bit of pleasure, so use her to capture Teal'c and bring Teal'c to me while I go deal with the bigger issue at hand. We see Ishta pick up her Tritonin, so she's about to get her power back too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, somewhere in the woods, Teal'c is showing Eren how to use a laser, a little mini handheld laser thingy. And Teal'c tells him that when the gate opens, he will just aim it at whatever target he has in mind, and the missiles will come through and strike whatever that target is. And it'll be great. It'll be lots of fun.
Good thing there are no cats on that planet.
Right? Seriously. Sam calls to Teal'c. They coordinate the attack, and they send their missiles through. Teal'c, while Eren is hiding and shining lasers at things, Teal'c is just running through and taking out Jaffa's literally left and right on either side of the path that he's running down.
It was badass. He had two staff weapons tied together.
He did. I noticed that he had tied them together.
That's amazing.
It was pretty funny. He runs down this path to get to the tent where Ishta is being held and goes in to get her. There's a Jaffa in there, though, holding Ishta with a knife to her neck and says that he can go ahead and zap them both, but that would kill her because she's super weak. Meanwhile, Moloch is outside with his Jaffa, telling them to shoot down the missiles that are coming through the gate. So, of course, the Jaffa do start trying to do that, but it doesn't really do a whole lot. And then Eren points the laser sight right at Moloch's chest, which Moloch notices, and it did remind me of a cat reacting to a laser pointer because he tries to, like, touch it and flick it off his shirt. And he's very confused when it doesn't move or respond. And then, of course, the missiles come for him because he's been tagged with a laser.
Teal'c is having the standoff with the other Jaffa holding Ishta. He tells Teal'c to drop his weapon, and Teal'c's like, don't you hear the explosions? That is the sound of Moloch dying. The poor Jaffa is like, gods can't be killed. And they're like, LOL, do you know how many gold we've killed?
False god. Dead false god.
But Ishta says something to Teal'c, which kind of gives him the go-ahead to shoot the other Jaffa. So he zats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she knows she's taken his return. Yeah. And Teal'c doesn't know that, and the Jaffa doesn't know that. But
so she's fine after the zatting.
Yeah.
And she's like, is Moloch really dead? And Teal'c's like, let's go have a look. But she's like, maybe just give me a sec, because I just need to regroup here.
She only just.
Yeah, yeah. So she,
and also she just got zatted.
She needs a moment. Next, we're back in the gate room having a wedding where at any moment the gate could activate.
It could. Thankfully, I don't think they're standing quite close enough to it to become
issues. I think they're at the bottom
of the ramp. Yeah.
Everyone's dressed a little nicer than the last time. Sam and Jack are in their dress uniforms and Daniel's in a suit. They go through their vows. It's all very, mushy.
My love for you is like a truck berserker. Would you like some making fuck berserker?
Indeed.
Like, my love for you is like the morning rays that dawn over an endless day. Stuff like that. Throughout the ceremony, Teal'c and Ishta keep shooting each other meaningful looks.
I didn't understand why Teal'c was suddenly okay with this.
I don't know. Maybe he just gave up. He's like, all right, I can't staff this, so I guess I have to get on board.
Maybe.
I don't know. But Braytak's like, yep, you're married. Hope you love and fight like warriors, just not with each other.
Worth mentioning, there was no kneeling before anybody
there
else.
There was
here.
No kneeling. It's just
so
a...
Corinne thankfully got her way and did not have to be subservient.
Yep. So happy wedding.
Indeed. Later on in the hallway, Teal'c and Ryak are talking the halls now. There is a legendary place where mountains meet the sea and there are hidden pools and it's beautiful. And Teal'c says, nope, it's real. And it is where I also took my honeymoon with your mother, and you will enjoy your honeymoon there as well. Teal'c tells Ryak that he thinks that there's no better mate for him than Corinne. I guess maybe he just got to know her better in this whole
maybe.
Thing.
Maybe.
And that helped, I guess.
Do you think they still had the wedding on schedule?
I don't know. That's a good question. Probably.
Yeah.
Maybe. Teal'c also says that he thinks that Dryak would have approved of her, too. So they have a little hug. Then Teal'c makes a reference to the rite of Ornok and tells Ryak to make sure that his knife is as sharp as possible. And Ryak looks completely horrified.
Yeah.
And says, maybe Corinne's right that some old traditions aren't so good after all.
What
I really want to know
hell?
What this rite of Ornok is now, but we never actually get to find that out.
Yeah.
I'm game. How's it done?
Just snap. I take my little machine. I take your little thing. See? I put it into this little hole here. And... nip the tip.
Then Ryak asks, what about Teal'c and Ishta and when they're going to finally admit that they're in love with each other for everyone else's sake? And Teal'c's like, maybe someday when I'm as wise as you are. Then they make their way to the gate room where Ishta and all of her people are leaving. I guess they've found yet another planet that they can go to with their horses to be safe. Jack even makes sure that they have got all their kids and horses and everything and haven't left anything behind. Ishta and Teal'c step off to the side to speak before she heads through. Ryak gives Teal'c a final wave as he heads through with Corinne. Ishta then tells Teal'c, once they're alone, that as he predicted, another Goa'uld has claimed the domain of Malak. And of course, balls, it is Baal, but balls, there has been no mention balls, of Baal balls, trying to kill all of the female Jaffa, so my argument still it would be that this is an improvement.
Yes.
And Ishta tells Teal'c to not wait too long before he visits. They have a little kiss, and then that is the end of the episode.
It is.
Did you like the episode?
I think mostly yes, because I like Teal'c, even though he was kind of being a dope in this episode a little bit.
Yeah, he really kind of was.
And I liked Ryak and his Corinne. There we go. I liked Ryak and Corinne, which I was a little surprised at. Not like liking them, but I was like, oh, they're cute. That's fun.
They are. I like Corinne a lot, but yeah, they're just so young. Though,
I know. They are. They are. And there were exciting and fun parts, or not fun, but there were exciting parts on the second planet that they found, but not the third. I don't know. I don't like, but I appreciate the difference, like, in tactics and desires between people who have same and similar goals, because I think that's, like, a real conflict that happens. So it was good to see that. I am very, very glad that Moloch's dead, and hopefully no more female children will be murdered for no reason. So that was a good outcome. It seemed all happy in the end, which I enjoyed. And Jack doing ping pong was funny, so I liked that as well. How about you?
Yeah, for the most part, I did like the episode. I didn't like Teal'c being a jerk, but like I said, I was a big fan of Corinne. I thought that she was a really good, strong character. For the most part, I like Ishta's character, although she can be a little annoying now and then, but for the most part, she's okay. It was a good storyline. I was glad that they managed to kill off Malak, and I thought that his death was very funny.
Yes.
That was pretty great. Yeah, I don't have a ton to say, but it was a pretty entertaining episode overall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will we be entertained next?
I hope so. There is no mention of Hammond in the description, but he's in the thumbnail on both IMDb and the TVDB for this one.
Aren't we talking about Atlantis?
We are talking about Atlantis.
Oh, why would it have a Hammond thumbnail?
Home, because McKay's efforts to harness the energy of an alien planet's atmosphere allows for a return trip to Earth.
Ooh.
But the team may not be able to return to Atlantis.
Oh, good. Hey, guys, we're going to wake up all your enemies and then we're just going to leave.
I'm wondering, though, if we are reviewing these in the airing order, why would Hammond still be at the SGC?
That's true.
And also, wasn't Jack in charge at the SGC when the Atlantis team left?
Maybe he just comes for a visit. I really don't remember.
Yeah, maybe he's just visiting. Yeah, yeah, I don't remember either. Much about this episode. So that was the TVDB. The IMDb has a much shorter and to the point description of a strange energy generating fog allows travel back to Earth, but something is wrong.
Helpful.
Yes, quite. Indeed. I will look forward to finding out what that is that's wrong and also seeing Donna Stavis.
Yeah, me too.
Anything else?
I don't think so.
Thank you so much for listening to Stargazing with Kathy and Mary. This podcast is completely listener supported and we couldn't do it without you. Show your support by telling everyone you know about how awesome this show is. Your reviews help a lot, especially on Apple Podcasts. You can find us at stargazing.space. Reach out to us via email at stargazing@gmail.com. Find us on social media at Stargazing on Instagram, stargazing@mastodon.world. Get some merch at tinyurl.com/stargazing. And finally, show your financial support by joining us over at patreon.com/stargazing. Thank you for traveling through the gate with us. We'll catch you next time on Stargazing with Kathy and Mary.
I'm Mary.
I'm Kathy.
And you've been listening to Stargazing. The end.
The end. Woo!
I'm gonna go stuff more food on my face.
I'm gonna have some food too. I'm probably not gonna stuff it though.
Why?
Because I'm gonna
stuff it. Just fit it in like hamster cheeks.
Okay. I mean, I could do that, but I'm not probably not going to.